done with any type of nearby analysis. Except for, as I indicated earlier, the close relationship with a board member and whether the Law Society would become a member of the board, and really insofar as members just need to clarify that point with both parties. In addition, the Legal Aid South Africa Bill does not affect provinces and therefore does not require that provincial hearings be hosted, as it is not a Section 76 bill. My last point, the committee has already decided to allow the Law Society to brief this committee today, which is great, and so it's recommended, in my humble opinion, that the Select Committee need not host any further public hearings on the Legal Aid South Africa Bill, and that committee should in fact deal with this bill in terms of the usual Section 75 procedure. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Is there any member want to have a clarity question to the Cornell advisor? Thank you very much, Anthea.
Chairperson, thank you very much for the explanation. I'm not sure if perhaps I missed something, but I thought really, in most instances, this information from the content advisor, just see if we can get them up front for the benefit of us really interacting with the report. Remember, we're dealing with issues of legal in nature, you know, and in most instances, we might be caught in a situation where we are translating instead of interpreting. So I'm just saying maybe in future, these good submissions, they are more helpful, especially when we deal not on everything, but on critical issues that are being contested. I think it's fair enough for us to have ample time with a submission from the content advisor, vis-a-vis what we might also have from our side. I think maybe that would be my submission, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Member. No, Chair. Thank you. Honourable Member.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm sure I wanted to clarify that this legal board, they've appealed the law of 1969. Now my question is, now the basic of this law is that the job to protect a peasant or an individual is not going to be outsourced. It's going to be done in house. I wanted to clarify this. Secondly, in the regulatory approach in it. So now these are appealing Section 74. Ne? So there's no need for us to go to a public hearing. Okay, thanks.
Honourable Manipul.
Thank you, Chair. I'm just want to say that to the look of things, the document is clear. That has been sent to us. But just saying, without wasting any time because of we are pressed by time, can we proceed because of, I think the members have gathered the information. And I want to, because I know most of the time I might be accused that I'm always talking about incompetence of the official. But I don't know about other members. I've received the presentation that has been tabled. So maybe you just have to verify if all other members have not received it. Myself have received it. So that's why I didn't have anything to raise with that time to go through it. But I just want to make an appeal. So can you proceed and move to the next level? Maybe you have to develop approach there. Because the program is there. And then also, Chair, since I'm here, but I'm making an appeal because I'm managing time. We, according to your program, all the presenters are given 15 minutes. Can you ensure that they take 15 minutes on their presentation? Otherwise, if you don't give them time, they just present, not thinking that we are pressed by time. That means saying that you can proceed and be able to move forward, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. I think we're still on time. Lucky. Let's call them and start.
could take.
Good afternoon, Honourable Member, Department of Justice, Legal and Law Society. I think we have to start. You can see our program is a little bit long. There's a lot of program for us. I declare this meeting is open. Our program is we will go for apologies, introduction by members and officials, presentation by Law Society of South Africa on its submission on the legal aid of South Africa's deal. Four, Department of Justice and Correctional Services response to the Law Society of South Africa submission. Five, committee interaction with the Law Society and the Department of Justice. Six, committee interaction with the Department of Justice and Correctional Services on the Legal Aid South Africa and South Africa Bill. Seven, committee decision and way forward with regard to Legal Aid South Africa. Eight, adoption of minutes of the 29th, 2014. Nine, consideration of draft first term program of the 2015. Can we adopt the agenda as it is, or do you want any addition? Honorable Sanga?
Thank you. In the note of time, I will move the adoption of this agenda as it is.
Thank you, Minister. Honorable Sanga, is there any seconder? Thank you, Honorable Manipule. Seconder?
Thank you, John. No, I'm not seconding.
Oh. I need a second.
I want to speak, if you allow me. Unless you want first to second. But I'm speaking on the agenda, yes. So I've said on by, we have not received the minutes like we requested yesterday, we should receive the minutes up front. And the minutes were sent now while we're in the other committee. So I'm proposing that this item number 8, then, because of we didn't have ample time to peruse the minutes, should be out of the on the agenda, then we can and then second on that one. Thank you.
But yesterday, the minutes were submitted to the members yesterday, and we decided to do it to today. Yeah. I think there's something, yeah. Can we second to the adoption of the agenda?
Seconded
by my colleague. Apologies. Then apologies.
Honorable Mokwele is apologizing. She is attending the Commonwealth Youth Parliament in Northwest Legislature.
Thank you very much. I think let's introduce ourselves. I'll start from myself. My name is Dumisane Kwimbi, Chairperson of Security and Justice. a permanent delegate from the Western Cape. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair. My name is Louis Zimanda from KZN, permanent delegate.
My name is Tavi Soana, permanent delegate from Eastern Cape, member of the committee.
Good afternoon. My name is Morgan Chetty, permanent delegate, KZN.
Good afternoon. My name is George Mislakis, permanent delegate, Free State.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Moses Teta Sulsanga from Mpumalanga, permanent delegate of this committee.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon. Jacques Julius, permanent delegate, Gauteng.
Maluloko committee, permanent delegate from Limpopo. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. My name is Jihad Mohadi, a member of the committee.
Thank you. I'll hand over to the Law Society and therefore to the Department of Justice.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. My name is Busani Mabunda. In this capacity as a member of the Management Committee within the Law Society of South Africa, allow me to take the opportunity and thank your committee for affording us the opportunity to make our submissions.
Thank you, sorry, sir. Just in front.
Is that the introduction?
Yeah, that's introduction.
Oh, I thought...
Yeah. You can introduce the lady next to you.
My name is Nkanta Chanza. I'm the Parliamentary Liaison Officer for the Law Society.
Good afternoon, Chair. My name is Patrick Hundermark. I'm the Chief Legal Executive at Legal Aid South Africa.
My name is Lawrence Bassett from the Department of Justice in the Legislation Section.
Thank you very much. On my right-hand side here is the Committee Secretary. Left is the quantitative advisor. At the corner there, the researcher, committee researcher. Down the officials and our guests. Thank you very much. I think we need to proceed. Welcoming you, sir, the Law Society of South Africa, and also want to welcome the Department of Justice. Now over to you, sir. And we've got a lot of, as you can see, our program is a little bit long. Would like to, if you can take it, please not more than 10 or 15 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you. Maybe that's one of the reasons why I was ahead of myself. I will try to be as crisp as possible. Like I pointed out that we take the opportunity to thank your committee for inviting us as the Law Society. But let one from the outset point out that we do welcome this bill with the hope of it becoming a legislation, and there are very good grounds stated as to why we need the legislation to come into being. And we do embrace the need for that. You will have noted that the points which we highlight, they are not many points, which implies the embracing of the bill in general. I will just have to shoot to the salient features. Insofar as it relates to that issue of paralegals, we believe that that issue has become a non-issue because it has been now clarified. So there's no issue around that in light of the clarification which has come forth. Now, the issue regarding I'll go last on the main issue, but let's deal with the issue of the right being preserved to the minister to appoint the deputy chairperson of the board. Ideally, if there is adherence to corporate governance, which seems to have been the key point which participants or those who made submissions seek to rely, practically what happens when we deal with boards, you find that during the first sitting of the board, a duly constituted board is the one which amongst those who are there is able to say that we appoint so and so as a deputy chair. We believe that that would go a very long way in terms of enhancing the image of the board itself, and also seeing to it that the issue of its independence, as it's expected to be, is basically enhanced. We say, though, more so having regard to the fact that when we look as to who the chairperson of the board is, the legislation is very clear that it has to be a judge, a sitting and active judge of the High Court. But then when it comes to the deputy chair, really, we believe that in line with the grains and the principles of corporate governance, it would go a long way in terms of pointing to that direction that there is respect, you know, for that, by making sure that in the first meeting, duly constituted, members present who are members of the board are the ones who do that particular election. It would be the right thing to do. The other thing is everyone is appointed by the minister when we look at the board and all that, but why should the minister be given more powers to say, I'm appointing you to the board and I am equally appointing you as a chairperson of the board? So it would be better placed, you know, with a duly constituted board in its first meeting to elect a deputy chair, at least given that the chair is elected statutorily by the Act itself, which we do not have qualms with. I don't think I will take that submission any further, but the most salient one is this one relating to the issue of corporate governance as well as stakeholders, on whether or not stakeholders should be members of the board. We have, of course, noted, you should have seen from our submissions, that we noted the deliberations which took place, culminating in the chair of the board pointing out that it's undesirable for stakeholders to be members of the board. And the citation or the reason cited there too lightly hinges on the principles as espoused by the King. Now, the bottom line is that when we deal with the Legal Aid South Africa Bill or Legal Aid South Africa Act, inherently and inextricably, much as it has to do with our members in society, it does affect the profession, and the profession it does include both the bar and the sidebar. And the profession is the one which is vested with the powers of dealing with implementing the regulations and all that, and overseeing the process within the legal fraternity. Now, it is inevitable that there will be and there should be more members in that particular board by those people who are the regulators in the profession. They are interested members. We can't run away from that. The issue would be, what do they do when they are sitting in that particular board? do they serve their interest, or do they serve the interest of the people, or do they serve the purpose for which the board is intended? We expect that those who are appointed know what is it which is expected of them as board members. They should know what rules should they be complying with. And they will inevitably be coming with the knowledge as well as the expertise, but over and above, they know the essence and the role as they are the people who have been accredited through court processes that you are the ones who are supposed to be efficiently be representing our people in, as a general public. Now, coming with that particular knowledge and that particular wisdom and divorcing yourself from the personal interest, which is expected of you, would go a long way in enhancing and making sure that the interest of the majority of our people are taken care of in that particular regard. Now, I would not expect a situation where a law called the Legal Aid South Africa Act comes, but and then it's populated by people who are not stakeholders in the legal profession. And there is a reasonable expectation from them as practitioners. They know what does corporate governance expect of us, and then they will be expected to it. And that's practically what is happening. But let me further point out that the Legal Practice Act, the now signed Legal Practice Act, recognizes that particular point. And in the course of the Legal Practice Act, recognizing that particular act, you will note that the council is populated by practitioners who are advocates as well as attorneys. But why should, when we deal with the Legal Aid South Africa, want the converse to apply? But similarly, by the same token, some of us who made representations at when we're dealing with the legal practice bill, then we preserved and made sure that we argue strenuously for the inclusion of the legal aid board member or a representative of the legal aid board in the regulatory body. Why? It was by virtue of the recognition of the need of the interplay, given the roles which the Legal Aid South Africa plays to our society, and said that they must equally have a representation in the Legal Practice Council. And that has been entrenched, and that has been assented to, and we fought vociferously to make sure that that be the case. But now, why should the Legal Aid South Africa be excluding another stakeholder who is paramount, and which stakeholder is a regulator of the profession? And mind you, there are issues of articles and the issues of conduct on how you should carry out yourself and all that. Now, if ever there are stakeholders, the stakeholders will ensure or will contribute positively in finding ways and means as well as mechanisms of ensuring that there's harmony as well as synergy. So the long and short of it is that in harmony, the Legal Aid South Africa as well as the legal profession in the form of stakeholders can work very well in enhancing the noble objectives. So it may be a question of how do you deal with the issues of personal interest when they come into the fore. And we expect that the men and women who actually men
board are alive to the questions of corporate governance and they know what is in them. But more so, if you do have people who come with interest, that interest is just inextricable and inherent. But if you are able to divorce yourself from that particular interest and do what is in the best interest of the organization which you are serving at a board level, you will be able to discharge your mandate and you will be able to come with the expertise which and then some of the people who do come may not necessarily have. Now, the nub of it is that there is recognition that the stakeholders are important in the Legal Practice Act, and then why should it not be the case? And Legal Aid South Africa has equally been given the stakeholder status as being part of the Legal Practice Council. That is where the country is going. So why should one door be open on the other side and be closed on the other side? But if we work together and then with that harmony, we can basically go a long way. There might be certain issues. I don't know, this issue of clause 22.3, where we did raise a concern that it appears that the court may remote refer a person to the Legal Aid South Africa for legal representation at the state expense, but that the internal remedies must first have been exhausted. That is just raised as a concern that there may be a dilatory effect in the dispensing of justice. I believe that is self-explanatory. It's just an administrative nightmare which we seem to be zooming in. It may be a question of how do we deal and how do we manage that particular aspect. So it's not a criticism per se, but it is just a highlighting of a point that, and then, you know, good intentions but unintended consequences in terms of the dispensing of justice. I think I might have covered, and then to the extent necessary, I will supplement, but thanks for the opportunity. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much for this presentation. Member? I think we need to, let's look for clarity and questions, and then we'll come back to the Department of Justice. Don't want to, Mohapi?
Chairman, because we have the submission made by Law Society of South Africa, I was going to suggest let's afford either the department or Law Society also to make their submission, and then on the basis of that we'll just come up with follow-ups, because the issue that might be raised by Law Society might be similar to issues that might be countered or agreed upon by the department or Law Society or Legal Aid itself.
Honorable Mapole.
Thank you, sir. I concur with Honorable Mohapi, but also to remind that let us go back to our agenda. We adopted it. According to agenda number 3 is where the Law Society is presented. Number 4, department who's going to present. After that, then we engage them according to the agenda. So I'm concurring with what Honorable Mohapi, but then remind ourselves what the agenda that we have adopted earlier on. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Let me give over to the Department of Justice. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. What I'm going to do is perhaps give an overview of our responses in the Portfolio Committee, because these submissions that the Law Society is making now were made in the Portfolio Committee as well, especially relating to the composition of the board and their request to be accommodated to have representation of the LSSA on the board. What we did in the Portfolio Committee, we prepare a document wherein the department gives responses to the submissions that have been made during the public hearings. And it's not a long response, but maybe let me just read what we said to the Portfolio Committee in response to what the Law Society was suggesting. And it reads as follows, and I quote. The King's 3 report reiterates that a director has a fiduciary responsibility towards the organization and is obliged to display the utmost good faith towards the organization. Each member of the board owes such fiduciary duty individually and directly to the organization as a separate legal entity and would breach good governance standards should stakeholder interests be placed above those of the organization. And I hear what Mr. Mabunda said, and he's quite correct as far as that is concerned. The composition of the board is important in as much as it determines the ability of the board to collectively provide appropriate leadership to the organization. In that case, the board needs to have a diverse range of skills and knowledge in order to perform effectively in its advisory and oversight capacities. Although codes of corporate governance increasingly refer to stakeholders' interests, they seldom propose a stakeholders on a board. Principle 1.1 of the King 3 report provides that the board is the link between the stakeholders and the organization, and that stakeholders should be engaged in such a manner that they have trust and confidence in the organization. So there's an emphasis on engaging with stakeholders. Principle 8.1 of the King 3 report provides that a stakeholder inclusive corporate governance approach recognizes that an organization has many stakeholders that can affect the organization in the achievement of its strategy and long-term sustained growth. In achieving that goal, the board should identify stakeholders and develop a strategy and suitable policies of how it will manage its relations with stakeholders. That, in short, is what the department's response to the issue was. There were long debates in the national, in the portfolio committee, and in the portfolio committee, the chairperson of the Legal Aid South Africa was there, Judge President Mhlomo, and he also engaged with the portfolio committee on it. And if the committee will, this committee will allow me, maybe I should read from PMG minutes of that particular response by none other than Judge President Mhlomo. The legal and it goes as follows. The Legal Aid South Africa Board Chairperson responded to concerns about board composition, saying that the current provisions in the Act had the legal profession specifically represented on the board. He explained the historical reasons for this provision. 2 out of the 4 attorneys on the board were to be appointed by the Law Society of South Africa. Then the third one was appointed also by LSSA, but must be from BLA, and the 4th attorney would be from NADEL, the National Association of Democratic Lawyers. And this is important what the judge said. He said he proposed that the committee should move away from the stakeholder issue completely because it always generated problems. He assured the committee that there would always be an advocate on the board, but it should not be via the stakeholder gatekeeping mechanism. The board had always been conscious of the need to have a member in the board who had the knowledge of public interest law. The board had always ensured that there was a board member that would add that perspective. He said it would be very irresponsible of the board to ignore those dynamics and come with a completely business-minded approach. Then the Legal Aid South Africa Chief Executive Officer is not here today, commented that it was imperative for the committee to bear in mind that this opportunity of drafting new legislation in a period where boards were core to good governance, it would be important that the committee did not revert to the era of stakeholder boards, which was when people with different hats and who represented their personal interests sat on the board. Board members should be there with just one hat, with the sole aim of representing the interests of the organization in which they were serving as a member of the board. Every board member should therefore see how best they could fulfill the mandate of the organization in which they were serving in terms of the Constitution and the Act. There was unanimous consensus on the exclusion of stakeholders from the board based on the compelling argument put forward by Legal Aid South Africa Board Chairperson Judge Mhlambo and supported by the CEO. So that's just a summary of what was said according to the minutes of PMG. I'm going to ask Mr. Hundermark to perhaps come in here as well, because it was mentioned in the King 3 report that boards of this nature must ensure that there is stakeholder interaction. And I do know that the board of Legal Aid South Africa does have that interaction with its stakeholders. And it might be useful for members of this committee to hear how the board now engages with its stakeholders. A question that arises if we are venturing back to the stakeholder era, as was said in these minutes, is if you have one stakeholder, the legal profession or practicing attorneys, what about the other stakeholders of Legal Aid South Africa? Why are they excluded? Where do you draw the line? Maybe I should also share with the development in the Portfolio Committee, the bill as introduced in Clause 7 stated that members of the board must have various skills and experience. And one of those skills and experience that was mentioned was experience and knowledge in legal services. Now, at the conclusion of the debates around whether Legal Aid South Africa should be included in the board or not, the Portfolio Committee proposed an amendment which was accepted. So Clause 7 of the bill now, in addition to requiring legal services as expertise in legal services, the words including a practicing advocate or attorney were inserted. So to some extent provision has been made for inclusion of a practicing advocate or attorney in the proposed new board of Legal Aid South Africa. Chair, I think maybe I should leave it there. No, in conclusion, may I just say, because mention has been made of the Legal Practice Act, and I do want to say about that act, I think members must bear in mind that its implementation is going to be phased in, and it is only going to come into operation fully in 3 years' time when the Legal Practice Council will start functioning. So there's not going to be a Legal Practice Council for at least another 3 years. Chair, I think maybe if I could hand over to Mr. Hundermark, he could add on what I've already said and then also explain to this committee the stakeholder engagement program that the board does have.
Thank you, Chair. I won't be long. I think Mr. Lawrence has referred to all the relevant issues. I think just from our perspective, I think he's correct that if you allow one stakeholder on what basis do you exclude any other stakeholders? What will be the criteria? So as we currently have it, we have the LSSA, we have four statutory law societies, we have the GCB, we have various other advocates associations that have now come on apart from the GCB, and then you have community-based organizations, NGOs, all who have an interest and a stakeholder interest in what Legal Aid South Africa does. So the question arises then, how do you prefer one stakeholder above the others and on what criteria do you do that? So that's the first concern, and that's the difficulty with then having a stakeholder board as to who do you give that stakeholder slot to, where you've got to be looking at the skills you need to be able to sustainably run the organization. But in terms of stakeholder engagement, as King 3 clearly says, you must have a structured manner in which you engage with your stakeholders to take their feedback. Now, we've just started the process, and we're concluding the process of our strategic plan for 2015-2020 to align with the new term of government. Now, in terms of that, we consulted with our stakeholders in all nine provinces, as well as a national level. where we call all stakeholders to come and give us input in terms of the strategic plan, our strategic direction, the programs that we intend to implement our strategic plan, so that they have that engagement with us, can give us the input. Now, we've collated all that input from the stakeholders at all 10 of those engagements, and that is going to our board on the 29th of November to inform and feed in to our strategic plan. So it's a very structured program as to how we engage with our stakeholders, not only then when we're doing strategic plan, but also on an ongoing basis as needs be, so that you can always take the issues of all your stakeholders into account. You're not able to always address all of them, unfortunately, because of limited capacity and resources, but you have to understand what their needs and requirements are. So that is very much done on a structured basis, so that we don't exclude any stakeholder in participation in terms of how the organization strategy and the implementation of that strategy is done. So I think just to be able to deal with that. Maybe the one aspect I can look at in terms of Clause 22C, the issue of exhausting internal remedies. I think that's firstly also a requirement from promotion of access to justice, that you've got to ensure that you utilize all your internal remedies first. But I think if I regret, that section specifically does provide, if there's unnecessary delay, the courts can consider it specifically as well, so that you are not limited, specifically in regard to criminal matters. If there's an unreasonable delay in dealing with the matter, the court then does have the discretion to call on us to give them a report as to what is happening and why legal aid has been refused or why the legal aid has not been dealt with. So the legislation does deal with that aspect, and therefore that you won't prejudice someone in regard to their trial. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honourable Member, can you interact with these two presentations, legal, one of justice, and law society of South Africa? Get clarity on your question. Thank you. Honourable Manipule. Honourable Mohapi.
Thank you, sir. Mine is only one, to legal and law society. First, I'd like to welcome both the presentation that you presented to us to be able to assist us to do our work better. Mine is with regards to your presentation. During your presentation, you mentioned that with regards to yourself as a society, you are a regulator and you are a key stakeholder in the legal aid. Just want to, with regards to your proposal on the clause, with regards to the wanting and representation in the board. So just want to check the impartiality of your role if you will be in the board. That will be there in the board and also as a regulator of the your members. The other one is to say that you welcome and you said you support the bill. But however, you have this reservation that you want to be there in the board. So does it say that if the bill is passed, you don't have confidence that the time of the implementation or the board members when they are appointed will not be able to ensure that if the bill is implemented the way it's supposed to be. So that's the reason why you feel that you must be represented at the board. I'm raising this because myself, I see that you want to be a referee and a player at the same time. And with the issue that what has been presented now by the department with us says that they have a strategy of the stakeholders, all the old stakeholders, that they are taking into consideration how are they working with the stakeholders. And if I go to your aims and objectives of your organization, number two, says safeguard and maintain the independence, objectivity, and integrity of the profession. Don't you think that you will be
compromise, you will not be able to realize the objective of the organization that is there. This is number two. Thank you, Chair.
Chef, in mind, it will be clever to seek in questions, especially two of the Law Society. One, regarding the issue of appointment of the deputy chair. I just want to get clarity. Is the minister, in terms of the provision of the bill, however the minister can, I mean, will be entitled to appoint all members of the board, what is it that is so bad that would make the minister to not to be granted that opportunity with the same people that he has appointed on the basis of analysis or profiles of each and every individual in that particular committee to further finalize in terms of designation? What is so best about it? It's just clarity question, the same question. Then the other question, Chairperson, Honorable Manopole also clarified. The Law Society is also suggesting that they need to constitute part of the board, you know, with the proviso that they are also advancing their interests in terms of their expertise. But safe to say it that in terms of the people that qualify to be board members, it has just been highlighted by the Justice Department that in most instances, the background in terms of the legal understanding will be considered. I just want to check with the Law Society regarding the issue of the autonomy of the Law Society. Where will one draw a line between the independency of the Law Society? And if you go further, Chair, lastly for my side, if you go to King 3, Chapter 8, is also talking about the stakeholder relationship, where in most instances, the relevant or different stakeholders would also be afforded that particular opportunity to interact directly with the Law Society. So I just want to check with the Law Society, what is it that has prompted maybe their reservation to say it would be better to be part of the board than to develop a working relationship as a stakeholder, given also the question of the autonomy of the Law Society, of the legal aid sort of thing. Thank you.
Over to you, sir.
Thank you very much, Chair. Right, the first one has to deal with where it is being said that the Law Society is playing a regulatory role and is a key stakeholder in in legal aid. It is a fact. It is a fact that the regulator is a key stakeholder in legal aid. Perhaps it may be a question of context as to in which context am I saying that. And then why one is saying this is purely and simply because the source from which legal aid is derived for our people in society is derived from practitioners. And when we talk of the regulator and being a key stakeholder within legal aid, I intertwined the submission with the regulatory role which the Law Societies play. And one other factor which should be borne in mind, perhaps to clarify this, is that when it is being said that the Law Society should be a party to the board of the legal aid, what has been happening before, which and then can be confirmed by both justice as well as legal aid, in other words, it won't be disputed, it's a question of how the process which has been involved leading into the appointment of board members into Legal Aid South Africa. What has been happening has been that when those adverts are done,
the Law Society talks to all its members and disseminate information transparently and fully, aiding whatever which is already known through the Legal Aid Board. And after that information has been disseminated, members who possess expertise and who feel that they meet the cut in terms of the specifics which are needed, send the information through to the Law Society. And the Law Society, in exercising the regulatory role and equally assisting to check whether the person is fit and proper to meet the criteria and all those requirements, is able to say, these are the names which we are submitting after going through the vetting process as a regulator. We are not making a suggestion that one should move away from that. And one other factor which should be understood, when we say that the Law Society as a stakeholder should be a board member, we are not submitting that those people who are serving in concert as such should necessarily be the ones who serve on the board. And as a matter of fact, the members of the board who are coming from the Law Society, it's not all of them who are council members. There are members who are outside council, but they are members of the profession as an independent profession whom has been seconded through this regulator. So I just wanted to clarify that, and then I believe it does take away the issue of impartiality. And when we look at the issue of impartiality, I believe that, and then it's important for us to look on the issue of the role of the legal profession. It is the source from which the aid which is being sought is drawn from. And it's a profession which is regulated. And then what harm is there if an interested stakeholder which aims to promote and advance the very objectives of this particular act are members of that particular board, as has been the case before? What I stated, which is a practical problem, is the members knowing that the moment you are drawn into the board, you must know your role as a board member. And you must know how to exercise that particular role. Now, if you are operating within the ambit and then you are all together, that's a reality which you must confront. And then kicking them out of the system does not bring the solution, but bringing people inside into the fold, but hammering to them that this is what is expected from you as stakeholders, and then if you are to exercise corporate governance and they are expected to discharge that particular mandate, we are alive to that. I could give a practical example, Chair, a quick one, of course. Tertiary institutions, they do have stakeholders in councils of university, and that includes members of the academia, the management, as well as external stakeholders. But what happens is that you know people are being taught from time to time that the inherent strictures of corporate governance are that you must be impartial and you owe your loyalty to the institution in which you are a board member. You are not representing your sectional interest. And I will not shy away from the fact that the lawyers, as the ones who have been empowered through courts, you know, as admitted practitioners, do have that particular necessary experience, and then it is a tap from which you can draw. And then they are assisting in terms of dealing with the objectives of the country. Because when we look at this issue of legal aid and helping our people, we should not confine ourselves and look at lawyers from a narrow sectional interest point of view. These are the people who, either through justice centers, they are admitted practitioners, those who go through justice centers. They have gone through the rigorous process like anyone else. And there is a source or tapping or engagement of private practitioners who are operating under the auspices of law societies as a regulatory body. And I also talked about the legal aid will be assisting quite a lot in terms of ensuring entry into the profession. And how do you ensure that entry into the profession? It doesn't happen haphazardly. There's a regulatory framework under which everyone subjects himself or herself to. So that stakeholder is important, and then the framework I have outlined, that it is not being suggested that if ever you are serving in council as such, the suggestion is that you are the one who have to serve at the legal aid board. I have outlined the processes on how it has been unfolding. But if the intention is, as it seems to be, that Legal Aid South Africa wants to get away from this particular arrangement and just go to the public in the form of practitioners and just open it, and then it doesn't go through the regulated environment, we are saying that that's not the best route necessarily to go, because there's no harm. And insofar as it relates to reciprocity in terms of recognition, we stated that Legal Aid South Africa itself was not serving in the legal practice in the context of law societies. But we are bringing laypersons into the profession to sit as members of councils. We have allowed, and it's unsentenced, that the minister can bring three representatives as an aid to our society. We have accepted that, and some of us fought for that. Legal Aid South Africa, there were protagonists who were against it, having representation in council. We fought for that. Now, here we are saying in reciprocity, in them seeing what is happening this side, and the profession seeing what is happening there, and aiding each other to enhance the national objective. What harm is there in having the profession being recognized, as was the case in the previous regime? So that's where we're coming from. That question of the appointment, I believe my language was clear, Chair. I just said that there is too much talk about corporate governance. And we say we understand it. And we're dealing with guidelines. And as and when we're dealing with guidelines, when looking at corporate governance, it should not necessarily be the alpha and omega that King is saying this. When King is saying this, then that is where we have to go necessarily. You have to look at your circumstances and what is confronting you as a reality, and say that based on what we have before us and where we're coming from and where we are going, what are the best ways which we can draw from the experience which is being espoused by King. The example: the legislation has been clear as far back as those years that a sitting judge will be the one who has Legal Aid Board, then Legal Aid South Africa and all that as a chairman. That is prescriptive, and it's in terms of the statute. There has been an evolution and too much talk about King and corporate governance subsequent to that particular legislation. But because that is a good practice and then everyone is happy with that, we have remained with that. But then we say, if ever we are the proponents of corporate governance as we want to be, why can't we, in a duly constituted meeting, in the first meeting, at least say that members of the board, duly constituted, are given an opportunity to choose the deputy chair of the board? There's no harm in that. Much as I'm not saying there's necessarily harm with the one of the minister, just to answer your question, but we are interplaying this thing in a bigger picture and trying to accommodate it, because if I were to answer according to King, I would say that, and then it's inappropriate to do that, and I don't want to use that language. And then hence I say, let us tap, see this side, and do what is best, as long as it's not offending, you know, to the greater picture of what is expected from the corporate governance perspective. And quickly, I believe I've got a duty, Chair, to point out this. I'm the president of the Black Lawyers Association. We also have the National Association of Democratic Lawyers, which is NADEL. We are part of the Law Society of South Africa. It has been a question of history which necessitated this kind of representation in institutions, many institutions, including the Attorney Fidelity Fund, including this very one of Legal Aid South Africa, and many other government institutions where black people, black practitioners to be precise, were excluded from being part of those particular representations. Now, if Legal Aid South Africa has encountered problems from stakeholders, it does have some historical reasons. So managing a problem is not ousting those stakeholders from being inside. You must devise a mechanism of dealing with that. Chief among is the point which I emphasize, that whoever assumes a position in a board must understand the fiduciary duty and the responsibility towards the board. And then that issue of interest, and then should not be the one which manifestly play itself to the extent that the chair of the board or members of the board cannot be able to nip it into the bud. But ousting people by just interplaying with the language while they are key and central for the very purpose for which the law is aimed, we submit that, and then it may not be the best option to take. But equally, we do note that at the portfolio committee, there was a thunderous applause on the submissions which were made. Hence, we made a request that we be given an opportunity to come and make a submission to yourself so as to give a perspective which you should be taking into account when ultimately making a decision, and we are very much grateful to that. Lastly, Chair, the issue of the stakeholder interaction. I don't believe that it can be used as an argument to oust stakeholders from being members of the board. It's not a plausible argument to use that submission to oust the stakeholders from being members of the board. The stakeholders' interaction, I would rather call it an imperative. I would call it an imperative for Legal Aid South Africa to make sure that they go out and reach out as much as possible, as much as possible. But that cannot be used as a reason to oust the stakeholders from being members of the board simply because there is this interaction which is taking place. But I would compliment them for doing the noble thing, you know, of promoting access to justice and making sure that they encompass almost everyone. But please let also the issue of the General Council of the Bar and the Law Society not to be equated with unrecognized and unregulated practitioners, which the Legal Practice Bill is seeking to cure. It is not a good argument to say that there are other practitioners who are not members of the General Council of the Bar and who are not members of the Law Society and all that. We are talking about the organized profession. And you will know that the Legal Practice Bill and where it's going, it's working on curing those particular maladies, which are the problems of historical significance of where we are coming from. I believe most of you might have dealt with the Legal Practice Act. You see where we are coming from and the governance and the way in which the governance was. Now, for Legal Aid South Africa to come and make a submission that recognizing certain organizations which are supposed to be in the main fold for the proper regulatory framework of the legal profession, I think it's something which and then would not be the best submission to make. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Mafonde. Mamuana, and Honorable Wana, and follow up for the Honorable Mohapi. Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I'm sure we're looking for clarity. How many stakeholders before the repeal of this bill were sitting? I'm not asking to the Law Society, I'm asking to the government. How many stakeholders were participating before the repeal of this? My second question is, the department is saying all the stakeholders. My question is, I want to seek a clarity. If you talk about the stakeholders of a body, are you not concentrating in the fraternity? That is the fraternity of that particular type of practices that is taking place. That's my question. And secondly, in this repealing of this, thirdly, what is the present current situation in monitoring other law fraternities? Like, Nediti, don't talk to me, talk to my lord. Everyone landed it at don't ask me, ask my lord. It in his data salon, don't. Who are those people who are running with those type of organizations? What is the impact going to have on the issue?
Thank you, Honorable Mohapi.
Chairperson, two questions, and maybe an emphasis from my side. Earlier on, we indicated that these are clarity-seeking questions which are not preemptive to any outcome. So I just want to place it on record. Because in most instances, we are making reference to the input submitted to us as the committee to ensure that as and when we take any decision, we make an informed decision. So we are not preemptive in terms of the direction that will be taken by the committee. Maybe also to put a specific position. You'd recall that in South Africa, there's quite a number of boards that are available. You have water board, water services board. You have quite a number of boards. You have also economic boards. You have quite a number of boards, you know. And how they are constituted, there is no clear barometer to say it's one glove fits all. The board would differ from one institution to the other, depending on the regulations that are available. And in most instances, even when we're talking about the stakeholder relationship, we're specifically trying to establish whether in this case, where will the interest be where you'd find that the stakeholder is represented in the board, and there's this platform that needs to be created, where there must be a platform where the stakeholder together with the board should sit together and pursue a particular goal. Where will the interest of the individuals that are both in the stakeholder and in the board be? That will be the question. Then to the Justice Department, I just want to establish what prompted specifically the review in terms of the composition of the board. Thank you.
Thank you. Let me start with the Department of Justice, and then we'll follow Mr. Mavunze.
Thank you, Chair. This board comes quite a long way. It's been in the making for a while. And the various drafts, it was started in conjunction mostly with the current Legal Aid Board. And that's, as far as I'm concerned, the appropriate place to begin with, because the board has experience and has had challenges over the years and has tried to, wants to address those challenges, practical challenges, to come up with a piece of legislation that is going to serve its purpose and make it function better than it does. May I just add that the Legal Aid Board has a fine reputation under the capable leadership of Judge Mlambo, and lots of these practical experiences over the years have informed the provisions of the bill. And of course one also has a look at what your client wants. In this case, the department's client is Legal Aid South Africa, what they want as a legislative framework. But you don't just take what they want, you go and do a bit of research, and if what they want is good in law and is good in practice, that informs what the provisions of the bill are about.
I thought there was another question which was directed to them.
Quite right.
Just in terms of the previous composition, there was one representative from the General Counsel of the Bar and then four representatives from the attorney's profession that were on the board in terms of the previous composition. And then there were other appointees that could be done by the Minister and also certain ex officio appointments like the Director General of Justice, which is still the same position as it is at the moment. So, but your specific appointments from the profession, there was five represented on the board.
Chairman, I just want to establish earlier on, maybe bear with me, I just want to establish earlier on you spoke about the historical background, what we have inherited. So I just want to establish, does it then imply with the new approach, does it then mean those that were historically disadvantaged are not going to be considered?
Sorry, this question is directed to Mr.
Mafondlebe.
Yeah, fine. Okay, all right.
Yes, clarifying, it's not clear to me because I wanted to understand how many members are coming from the Law Society of South Africa in that previous arrangement. Because he is saying there are four lawyers. So I don't know where they are coming from. Which organization?
Chair can respond to it. Would become from the nominations would come from the Law Society of South Africa, and they then submit those directly to the Minister of Justice in terms of the current practice. And then there's also one from the General Counsel of the Bar for the advocates. They also make that nomination then direct to the Minister of Justice.
Mr. Mavunde.
Thank you, Chair. The question dealing with where you have a stakeholder member who is also a board member, and then it happens that the two of them have to meet to in pursuit of a particular objective, where will the interest of the member practitioner be? I think I captured it well. This is what happens in practice and through experience to allay the fears or concerns. When members are wearing that particular cap of being a regulator, and on the other side this person is a board member, what has been happening, or what normally happens, is that they resign from one so as not to affect the other. But what will have come out is that this person will have come, of course, through the recommendation of an organized profession after the vetting. For instance, we do have a classical example of what happens largely with the Attorney's Fidelity Fund when we are at the higher level. The current chairperson of the Attorney's Fidelity Fund board was a member of the Law Society of South Africa, and he could not reconcile being there while he is also chairing, and he resigned from the Law Society so as to deal with the board matters. So when they meet, and then being the two stakeholders, notwithstanding the fact that he had got a recommendation through the organized profession into the board, he is able to deal with decisively with the interest of the body to which he owes the fiduciary duty to. Hence, I clearly stated before that what is important is for those people to understand their fiduciary duty, as opposed to ousting, and while they know where their interests lie, where they are coming from, they must know what the tenets and strictures of corporate governance dictate and expect of them. So that's what normally happens. And for instance, if you happen to be a chairperson or a co-chair of the Law Society of South Africa, and you are serving in a particular board, then for that term when you are sitting as a co-chair, you cannot be seen or heard to be a member of the board. So those are the nuts and bolts from the practical point of view, I think, and then it does assist where the interest, how does one deal with that particular interest. And that's what is expected. Hence, I said, don't throw away members of the organized profession, but deal with the problem, deal with the mechanisms from within in terms of managing the problem. I believe it, to an extent, answers that particular question. The issue of the historical background, it is an important question. It is an important question from where I stand. Chair, allow me to point out that that particular submission, as it came out in the committee, much as it has been loaded, from the legal profession point of view, we are coming from a very, very, very painful background, such that even if the statement as made has been made genuinely and with good reasons, it may be dangerous to the negotiations of the legal profession, more so from the disadvantaged background when we deal with the Legal Practice Act. It does have a potential of shaping the direction of how the future of the legal profession is going to be in this sense. Currently, the national forum which is about to start recognizes Black Lawyers Association representatives and an ADEL representative in the national forum, where they are going to hammer the details as to, amongst other things, which may become an issue unless there are challenges or no challenges, how should the composition of the ultimate legal practice council should be. Now, I must be clear when I talk about certain consequences which may have ramifications for the bigger picture. What may happen is that this may end up being adopted as the way in which the composition of the legal practice council is going to be in the final end. I'm talking about this particular trend. While you find that there are intrinsic, serious, historical, and painstaking factors which are still hitting us as members of the profession. For example, the issue of the demographics. The black lawyers, both attorneys and advocates, are substantially in the minority. That's how we stand, that's how it is. So it does affect one way or another those particular questions. Hence I hinted on the issue of historical significance, if not properly managed. But I must qualify that it has come out with good intentions and all that, but there are those dynamics which are in the interplay. So I believe it is an important question which I wanted to not to talk about, but it is important that and then you raise it. So those dynamics are there. Just
asking for myself, but to say, does it then imply that in this democratic dispensation, the minister would not be considerate? Is that maybe the impression that is being created in terms of considering the democracy as you are alluding to?
I'm not suggesting that. Chair. If you go to the record leading to the adoption of the legal practice bill, I will personally point out, go to the submissions of the BLA, go to look at what the Act provides, go and check how much we fought for the powers of the minister. So understand the submission which is being made now as a counterbalancing. So we can stand very firmly in standing for whatever right which we believe that and then the minister should have, and then with the proper checks and balances. So there shouldn't be doubt when it comes to that. I can invite you to have a look. There's a clear record on that. There's no fear as such. But at the same time, I said that when there are guidelines, when there's an act, when there are guidelines, when there are regulations and all that, it is too important for us to say that to the extent that something may not be offending, let us be pragmatic and take other factors into account and put them into the pot. So I'm coming from that particular understanding and background.
I'm about to... all members want to say something? Okay, thank you. Hoshi. Chairperson, just to check on very simple procedural things. The society is fully aware that the piece of legislation we are discussing here. It's section 75. And as such, the key submission would have been making impact if it was done during the process of the Portfolio Committee of the National Assembly. Have they made a submission to the National Assembly? If they haven't done, what makes them not to and believe that this, you know, end-tail process can, you know, change the whole process? Just to check the chapters.
Thank you, Chair. There are submissions which were made by the Law Society of South Africa, and there are people who were present making submissions on behalf of the Law Society of South Africa, and they were given an opportunity to make submissions on behalf of the Law Society of South Africa. And some of the submissions which are being made here are not new, hence one of them is the one which I said that, and then subsequent to the submissions which were made, we do not have any qualms with respect to the issue of paralegals, as the language has now been amplified to accommodate that particular concern. It came as a result of, amongst others, the submission of the Law Society of South Africa. And most importantly, Chair, is that in this particular instance, we felt that it would be appropriate that with respect to this particular one on representation from a composition point of view, flowing from the submission which was uploaded, of course, by the National Council in the National Assembly, we still have a second bite of the cherry in that there is this esteemed committee to which we have to make submission to. And we believe that this particular committee applies its mind before it makes an endorsement. And if the opportunity is there to come and talk to this August committee and make submissions where we find that and then something may go without the other party having been heard for consideration, this does become an opportunity. Yes.
Thank you very much. I think yes, I forgot.
Chair, with your leave, if I could just make one point. Thank you. Johnny, if you have a look, we have amended the bill as it is to include an admitted attorney or advocate as a member of the board. What the proposal is then, that the board is not able to determine the skills that it needs, specifically within that position, to be able to deal with it from a board perspective. So the proposal is to take then the board's ability to determine the skills that it requires overall in terms of the board, what it needs, and then to make that recommendation to the board. It takes it out of their hands and puts it into a regulatory institution's hands, which from a governance perspective doesn't make sense, because what it says is a board doesn't have control over the skills that it needs to be able to effectively run and with accountability run that organization. And I think that's the key point that we've got to understand in terms of the submission that it's made. So it's not doesn't say that there's not going to be someone that's a lawyer that may not have some stakeholder background that will be on the board, because we all come from specific backgrounds where we have interests, and the question is how we deal with it. But here is then that the board's ability to determine its skills, the skills that it needs to competently run that organization, is then limited and is not able to then do that. So I think that's one of the key points that needs to be made in response to the submissions. And I think so the bill has been amended that there will at least be an attorney or a practicing attorney or a practicing advocate that's on. It's just determining who determines the nomination, which the minister must obviously then appoint. And it does rest with the minister. I think that point has been dealt with in terms of the composition of board, in terms of equity,
in terms of gender representation, all those kind of things, I think we're very clear that the minister will most certainly apply his mind to that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Legal Aid, Legal Aid, Board of Justice and Law Society. I think we need to, as you said, Mr. Mavundla, let the committee apply its mind on this one. Then the committee will come back to you. Thank you for coming and make this submission orally to the committee. At least I'm sure the committee now will apply its mind on this one. Then we'll come back to you. Sorry about calling you so late because we tied up. As you see, that we are going to the end of the year. We have to try to make sure that things like this are managed well and finalized early. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you very much. It's good to get the opportunity. We had to rush, and we thank you for the opportunity nonetheless. Thank you. Thank you, members.
We are going to deal with you at the Department of Justice. Thank you, Dembele. Yeah, you may. Sorry? Yes, you can.
Thank you.
Honourable Member, now the committee, we need to interaction with the Department of Justice and Correctional Services on the Legal Aid South Africa deal. I think also we can also include item number 7. You remember that the Department of Justice did their presentation before. So it's a matter of the committee take a decision whether are we adopting or approve the bill. Can I get the clarity on this, Honourable Member?
Okay.
Honourable Sangna?
Thank you, sir. Yeah, you're correct that I was worried checking if the department are going to make the presentation again because they did present to us. So last time it was a briefing, now I think they're here to formally present the bill to us. So it's up to us as a committee to deliberate and take a decision on it. We can do it in a present or in their absence. We don't need to be here really, so they can return way forward. It's for us to deliberate. Of course, we had just had the presentation from the Law Society and the department. So I think we need time as a committee to deliberate on both presentations that have been given to us, and then we take way forward.
Definitely.
Thank you.
On that page now. Can we also the members? We'd like to deliberate with the Department of Justice on the Yes. I think we can excuse the department,
yes.
And we, as a committee, then. Honourable Member?
It would be a. I guess it's business unusual, but. The department introduced the bill and they've got to safeguard the policy they are putting in the bill. As we have, yes, the exclusive right to amend, not to amend the bill, but their interest has always been that they are part of it, and as such, the meeting, it remains open in a public meeting. So I don't see a reason, because the next stage of the bill is, you see, is for them to present a clause
and we interact with the clause if we are going on formal deliberation. So it's them who would then say whether that clause we are amending or we are agreeing to sits with the policy proposals that the bill is proposing to Parliament. So I think that's the process and that needs to be followed. So in essence, they should be in the meeting explaining as we deliberate as the clause is being put. But I think your staff can explain much better than me, Chair, but I think that's the procedure. But if it's to do with the decision on the submission, I don't think that there's any harm relating to that.
Thank you. Can we interact or deliberate on this bill as quick as we can? Because we do not have enough time. Yes, please.
Sorry, Chair. We've also just made a resolution, so there's consistency, Chair. We've also just made a resolution, which doesn't need time lapse, but we need to be cautious of. We've made a resolution that we will apply our mind to the submission that was presented to us. So I'm not sure what that means. In essence, practically, it might mean that we still have to somewhat interact with that process. And that's also a policy matter, then, Chair, if I may highlight. The policy matter there is that the department, they are saying that in terms of the preferred policy approach would be that the minister appoints the deputy chair. Then the presentation from the Law Society, one is that they disagree totally with that approach, that policy approach or policy proposal, that they would prefer that the board itself is empowered to decide on the deputy chair. So it's not just a straightforward matter as such, Chair. That is also taken in reference to the briefing by the content advisor to say what is the status of the decisions we make. The decisions we make are only called proposals. They are not amendments. And with the reserved right to the NA, in my understanding, I might be wrong, in my understanding that they can agree, nor disagree with it. So I'm not too sure. So I feel we are in a predicament where we are not easily and could simply decide now. I feel we don't. I don't know, Chair, my colleagues can guide me, but my feeling is that if we are to deal with these policy matters and look at what approaches we want to take in terms of the matter, stakeholder representation is a key principle that they put in their submission, the appointment of the deputy chair. So I'm just outlining, Chair, so that we don't falter per se, or we don't err in terms of how we then process matters forward. But we could take deliberations, Chair, on these assertions that I've put across. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Zimande. Honorable Mohapi.
Chair, in terms of saying we need to apply our mind, I think we have taken note of the submissions made, and given the time for lapsing of the bill, maybe if we can get guidance, then you take it from there. Because I would really suggest that if there's still ample time for us really to finally conclude on this matter, we deal with it appropriately. So I'm not sure. Maybe we need to establish what is the timeline in terms of lapsing of the bill, and not necessarily rush.
honourable members, in terms of Rule 238, deals with the collapsing and resumption of proceedings on bills. 238.1 says all bills introduced in the council, and that is the key word, introduced in the council, which have not yet been passed by the council in terms of Rule 197, when it rises on the last sitting day in any annual session, lapses, but may be reinstated on the order paper during the next ensuing session by resolution of the council. Now, the 75 bill is not introduced. It's referred to the National Council of Provinces, so it doesn't lapse at the end of the year. It will continue into 2015.
Thank you very much, question and member. I don't know, because really, Section 75, because I think that I don't know whether there's anything that we can stop or do anything in this thing. That's why I was saying that it's easy for us, because this is Section 75, so there's no need of us. That's why I'm saying that we can consider this deal back to national, because there's nothing, because we're Section 75. Thank you, Manipule.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to find out from maybe my colleagues here, if do we have any challenge now engaging on the presentation that was done now by the Law Society, so that we can conclude on this matter in front of us. Because of the presentation is here, what are we saying? We need to pronounce only on the Law Society. And then because of earlier on, at least the content advisor took us through on the amendments that are there on the bill. So we should have, if we're saying let us engage on this, maybe can take us 10 to 15 minutes. If the members say no, we need ample time for us to be able to digest what the Law Society has said to us and be able to apply our mind with regards to the bill. Because like you said, it's clear, in Section 75, what the Law Society has requested us, wanted us to change to take the bill differently, which according to myself, in the rules 210, it says something else. So I'm just wanted to make an appeal to my colleagues. Is it difficult for us to engage on this matter now by the presentation, then we may find the way forward? Thank you, Chair.
Members, that's the question.
The question is this. Do we have any difficulty on engaging, deliberating on the presentation that was presented to us by the Law Society? Because since well, the department made a presentation to us last week already, we had the liberty on interacting with the amendments that are there in front of us. The only thing that is standing in front of us is to deal with the submission that was presented to us now by the Law Society, so that we can find the way forward with regards to the amendment of the bill that is in front of us. We can take a decision whether we approve or we reject the amendments that come in from the NA. Thank you, Chair.
Decision, please take a decision, because if what is said by Manu is correct, I'm not referring, but give us a special committee members only.
Yeah, Chairman. No, we do appreciate time given to us to go and peruse the bill itself. But, Chair, because we still have time, and as you see in terms of the look, we still want to deliberate more as the committee in regard to this. Because now we're exposed of the acts themselves. There are various acts, like, the, for example, your Law Society Act that we need to refer, and your previous act that we're about to amend. We really need time, Chairperson, to look at those, and before the 19th, perhaps, because we have space, before the 19th, we will be able to conclude on this bill. Thank you, Chair.
Chetty, you want to say something, Honourable Member?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I just wanted to second Honourable Manipula. Chair, and I don't want to drag this out. We've been complaining in the earlier set of committee about the officials, and we've been dragging our feet.
I think right now, unless there's members in this House who feel, or in this committee who feel that they've got serious issues that they want to discuss, or concerns that they need to address, because I'm saying right now, Chair, and I speak on behalf of the DA, we are ready to make a decision on it. Because we have interrogated and we know where we stand on this. Now, unless other members in the House, we also earlier, prior to the officials and the Justice Department arriving, had a debriefing from our committee secretary, I'm sorry, content advisor. So, what I'm saying, Chair, some of us are in a position now to make a decision. And that's why I'm saying I'm dealing with the Honorable Manapola too. If there is a burning issue that any of the other members have that we need to discuss, let us rather engage, have a discussion now. And I'd like to move for us to go ahead with this. Because, Chair, we've got a month left. And we're going to ask ourselves, in all three of our committees, how much have we really achieved? And we can't carry on blaming the officials if we ourselves are going to be dragging our feet. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Perfect.
Yeah, Chair, can we request for 5 minutes? Just 5 minutes, Chair, without, strictly 5 minutes. For a break. Yeah. No, it's for a break. No. George and Chet, you can't say it's caucus. I'm saying it's break. Otherwise, then they are becoming chief whip.
We've 5 minutes break.
Chair, I'm just worried. When I belong to the governing party, I knew we had a caucus before our meeting.
Yeah,
not during the meeting, but it's okay, Chair.
Yeah, eating this.